Hi, this is Jason Stanford, co-author of Adios Mofo and Democratic political consultant, here with television personality Larry King.
Islamabad, you're on.
Larry, we're here to introduce Tribcast.
I saw that movie. Dustin Hoffman, Warren Beatty, great friends of the show.
No. Tribcast is a podcast. They're talking about politics.
All right, then here's Tribcast. Let's get right to it. And they're not wearing pants.
Well, thanks, Jason. I guess we all say adios, mofo, back to you. This is the Tribcast for the first week of February, 2012. I'm Ben Philpott from KUT News and the Texas Tribune, here with Evan Smith, editor-in-chief and CEO.
Where's Reese?
Reese is prepping for another wonderful cruise somewhere. I believe this one is 1950s folk singers who reinvented themselves as disco artists in the 70s.
I thought he was in a life raft with the Indigo Girls, actually.
I used to be the backup for Phil Ochs. Okay. Great.
Ross Ramsey, executive editor.
Howdy.
And editor of Texas Monthly Magazine, Jake Silverstein, our guest appearance here today or this week, whatever.
Very good to be here.
Oh, well, you say that now.
I want to just tell you, I'm playing this podcast under protest. I didn't invite you.
I had no idea it was so lavish here in the studio. I've been, you know, listening. You just really don't realize.
You don't get a sense of the ambiance, how the donor dollars have paid
just
for
incredible.
An
I don't know if the donors are aware of
the
all soaps, the yeah,
you know, right
Persian
I
carpets.
I don't know why you didn't bring any Franklin barbecue, you ingrate.
I was not told that Franklin barbecue was part of the assignment.
That would have been great.
It's a nice cover.
Well, thank
may
you.
I say?
Thank you.
I appreciate how hard it is to do this. It was a nice cover.
It's actually not that hard to just put meat on the cover.
No, that part's not hard, but the actual design of it is lovely.
Right.
It's a lovely cover.
If you need any Evian water, just raise your hand during the Tribcast, and staff will bring it to you.
Our
the green M&Ms are also a nice
touch. He will pour the remaining liquid from his gourd into your mouth.
That's right. Another olive for your martini. No.
Try to get a visual on that.
Great. All right. So after we talk about gourds today, I think we will talk a little bit about redistricting, campaign money. We've got another quarter of results in. And look ahead at the state budget. Different agencies and different people are beginning to talk about what the next budget battle is going to look like here in the state of Texas.
Like the guy stops running for president, and now we can talk about the state business again, right?
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it really is interesting that, I mean, I'm sure they've been scheduled this way anyway, but so Perry drops out after or before South Carolina, and all of a sudden you have about 15 committee meetings within the last 2 weeks and into the next couple
Everybody,
weeks.
Everybody, the cat's back to work, right?
Yeah. That's what right. it is.
And, why don't we just stick with that then? So as different people have been meeting, you've been hearing more and more about what the next budget's going to look like. And more people, agency heads and others, retiring lawmakers, coming out and saying, boy, we got to do something. So yesterday had a couple of big ones dropped. State Senator Steve Ogden came out and said, look, the governor needs to call a special session after the primary, whenever that is, and we'll get to that in a minute, and have a call for a statewide property tax. Don't have a heart attack out there. Statewide property tax. Of course, he's not coming back.
Statewide property
tax.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
You had second me attacked.
and then Robert Scott had a speech yesterday where he said, the system is screwed up.
This is the state's education commissioner.
Yes. Right. The system is screwed up, and I'm not going to put up with it anymore. And
by which he means the state.
The testing. Finance. No, he thought that
he also referred to the state testing.
But both of those guys are saying, we need to act quickly, but the courts are about to jump into the school finance. I don't think the legislature is going to do anything until the courts are done.
Somebody asked me that yesterday.
Do they ever?
No, they never have.
Somebody asked me that yesterday, should we do a story on whether or not there's going to be a special session on education? And I said, the court does something.
Right. Ross's position on all this, which I think is right, is
you have
a position, which is that a whole bunch of people at the legislature would, if left to their own devices under no political pressure, would be more willing to spend money on public education. But the consequences of doing so these days are too dire.
Right.
Politically for them.
Right.
And so they're secretly hoping, having refused to fund public education to the degree that many people in the state believe they need to, they're hoping that the courts put a gun to their heads so they can say, well, we have no choice. And secretly they're going to be very happy about this.
Right. It's how they've always funded education.
Right. Or done anything, right? Isn't the court?
Right. This is how we got the last – it's been a while now, but this is how we got the last big round of money for mental hospitals, mm-hmm. for state schools, for
– prison reform.
The prison reform.
The fact is –
judges.
Jake is right. It extends even beyond that. I suspect that there are some people, and there are Democrats who will insist that they've talked to Republicans who've said this to them privately. There are some people in the legislature who said, look, we didn't want to draw maps that screwed the Democrats as badly as we did, but we had no choice politically. We had to do it. We hope that in the course of this court action, the maps reset somewhere closer to what should be, and then we'll have no choice but to accept what we knew was probably the better course to pursue.
Railing against it.
Right.
Right. Ignore, ignore what I did to you because they're going to fix it. And, you know, it wasn't me, really.
McAllen.
It's just part of the kabuki theater. Of,
right.
Exactly right.
In McAllen last week, Veronica Gonzalez, in fact, said we have it on the site now, the conversation we had with her and Chewy and Aaron Pena about this, that she said there were Republicans who came up to me and said, I'm really sorry about what we did to your district, but we really didn't have any choice politically. We had to redraw your district the way that we did.
Sure they did.
Well, they say they had no choice.
Right.
But because the politics were what they were. And again, to extend this beyond that, her point is, the implication is that if the courts come back and say you've got to do it more fairly, there'll be people who will breathe a sigh of relief quietly for, you know, the opportunity to
problem,
do what they should have done.
One of the biggest problems the Republicans had with redistricting was that they were trying to protect people in seats that they were surprised had elected Republicans. So they had a map that they thought would elect 90 Republicans on a good day, and it elected 101, and all of a sudden they have to draw a map that protects 11 guys who shouldn't have been here in the first place. The congressional map had to protect two guys who shouldn't have been there in the first place, who just won. It was a, you know, 2010 was a really big year. Kiko Canseco and Blake Farenthold were as surprised as everybody else when they got elected.
And Burka, who I'm going to make you answer for the next 20
come
minutes.
On now.
See what happens?
Burka, in fact, reported this last week, and I think he was reporting what somebody else had reported, which is that there's the deal that had been in the works was going to essentially be an acknowledgement on the part of Republicans that they had to throw Canseco and Farenthold over the side of the boat.
Right.
That they never should have had those seats.
The deal, you're talking about the deal that fell through.
The deal that has apparently not happened since we just keep hearing that now the deal is.
Well, the deal, you know, this deal, they have until Monday.
Monday next.
This
so what the
Monday.
Court said was, we want you to have something on our desk by February 6th, which is Monday, or you're not going to have an April election. And,
correct.
And not having an April election means you're not going to have a congressional or legislative election in April. May still have a presidential election. We'll come back to that.
Split primary.
Right.
What you're talking about. Yeah.
Right. So you're not going to, you know, come back by the 6th. And so this is going to fall apart and come back together three or four times. You have nine different groups suing the state, and they're all making different arguments. So from, you know, so the kind of the general argument is from 30,000 feet, everybody agrees, yeah, we have a couple of three seats in Congress, and we have 4 to 6 seats in the House that we need to argue about. In the Senate, all they're arguing about is the Wendy Davis seat in Tarrant County. So everybody says, okay, that's cool. We can work out a deal on this. But then you get into the particulars of it, and you say, I want this line to be here. I want you to protect this guy. And then they start, you know, then it's a crab bucket.
I want this country club to be in my district. You know?
Right. Right. Well, right. There's the whole thing. Joe Barton wants the Cowboys and the Rangers complex in his district. Lamar Smith wants the San Antonio Country Club in his district. Lloyd Doggett wants his district in his district.
right. It's a little much to ask.
Well, I mean, you know, but they get these funny things. Lloyd Doggett's district has nothing to do with the Voting Rights Act. It's not a minority opportunity district. It's not a coalition district.
But this gets to the point that Lou Dobbs, apparently, among others, seems to miss.
Oh, everything those guys said in that argument was wrong.
Both sides were wrong.
Yeah, it's like neither one of you read
Lou Dobbs and John Stewart had no idea what they were talking about.
Crazy pants.
Didn't stop them.
The assumption, though, that you can parcel off a certain number of districts that you have the permission of the courts to redraw without it impacting the other districts just defies logic. The fact is it's a puzzle. A jigsaw puzzle. And if you change the shape of one piece, then necessarily you're going to be changing the shape of other pieces, maybe not every single piece. But the idea, as Lou Dobbs alleged, that you could just – we're only going to deal with these four districts and it's going to have no impact on the rest of the map is wrong.
Well, particularly on congressional districts because, you know, in state house districts, House and Senate, you can have some deviation. You can vary from the ideal population by 5% either way. In congressional districts, you can't deviate. They have to be exactly the same size.
Well, and as a point of reference, when the courts redid that – congressional seat back in, what was it, 2005?
What seat?
When they threw out one of the seats. I don't know which one it was.
Okay.
One of the San Antonio seats, I believe.
Okay.
And they ended up redrawing 4 seats around it, I believe.
Right. Because you got to, you know, it's a waterbed. You push here and it kind of ripples all the way through.
Redistricting is a waterbed.
Yeah, there you go.
That's going to stick with me.
That'll be the name of your first album.
Right? That's the band name.
Actually, Ross had a good band name in the editorial meeting on Monday, the Lactating Nazis. Is that right?
The Lactation Nazis.
The Lactation Nazis, right. Pardon me.
Anybody who's had... What kind of editorial meetings have you guys had? And has had that nurse come down the hall within minutes. Oh, you've got a new baby. Here. Yikes.
You're doing it wrong.
Right. Exactly. Everybody's doing it wrong.
Kind of like the way you're hosting this podcast, yeah, I'd say.
Exactly.
Well, see, now, I think that there's a very good chance I will screw it up later, but I don't know that I've screwed it up that much yet.
So we're 11 minutes in and we've covered all the subjects. What do you want to do?
No, but
I think it's interesting.
You guys skirted the budget issue.
Well, what's funny is that we skirted the budget issue because we went straight from school finance and the courts having to force us to do something on school finance to another area where the courts are going to have to force us to do something. I mean, there's a lot of common denominators.
See, isn't that great for Governor Perry, though? As long as the courts continue to force Texas to do things, doesn't that give him political capital?
It gives him cover. It doesn't give him capital.
It is ironic that in a state that bristles at any kind of federal intrusion, we now have three different federal venues for redistricting. I mean, we've invited much more federal intrusion into this process than we perhaps could have had.
Right.
Well, that's all about trying to stay out of the Obama Justice Department.
But hold on. Back on this budget. On this budget issue, the parameters of the budget next time. As much as we want to talk about the dire and, you know, details of everything, the parameters at satellite view as opposed to ground level view are kind of what they were the last time. You have a budget of X amount of money. More than 50% of it is restricted, can't cut it.
Right.
And of the portion that is unrestricted and can be cut, on the assumption that there's going to be a shortfall of some size and cuts are necessary, the vast majority of the money that can be cut is still in public ed, higher ed, and healthcare, much like last time. So if you
not
talk
the vast majority, all of it.
Well, all but a couple billion. Right. There's a couple. My memory of the last couple sessions.
You can't cut it. I mean, the deal was and still is that you could cut everything that's not health and human services, public and higher education.
And still have stuff you had to cut.
You could cut everything. You could cut the legislature, the governor, all that stuff, and you still wouldn't be there.
The point is, though, that when you talk to people in public ed, say, is that, you know, the Texas Association of School Administrators has been meeting this week in Austin. I've spoken to school groups over the last couple of weeks elsewhere in the state. You have a lot of very nervous school administrators, you know, school board members, people who work in the region offices and all that, who are saying, well, is next session going to be the same as last? I don't see how it isn't, because if you assume that the structural deficit is not fixed in time for the next biennium's budget, you're going to go into the next budget cycle with a shortfall of $8 billion, $10 billion, something.
Well, they already know part of the shortfall because they built it into this budget.
Right.
Well,
the bill is going to come due in, February of the
– Right.
You're talking about the Medicaid bill?
About this time next year, they're going to be talking about a supplemental bill.
They wrote an 18-month Medicaid budget or a 17-month Medicaid budget for a 24-month biennium. Right. They knew they were doing this. It's dishonest for them to say – anybody in the legislature to say, we did not spend the rainy day fund. It's true they didn't spend it.
Because what are they going to have to
draw?
It's
not accurate that they're not going to
What amount are they going to have to
$6 billion?
$5 billion.
They started with the low estimate was 4.8. The high estimate was 6. They expect to have 7 to 9 billion in rainy day.
Well, they expect, but they
don't
know.
And then they always have. There's always a supplemental bill that basically is, well, we underestimated caseload growth or we underestimated enrollment growth in the schools. So there's always a couple of billion there. So basically, what you do, you know, just for quick math, is take the rainy day balance and that thing and the supplemental stuff, and you just cancel them out. And then you say, okay, so going forward, what do we have? And it's about a $10 billion deficit between what they promised and what they expect to bring in. And that's the structure.
And you're including in that $10 billion, the $5 billion or so for Medicaid?
No.
See, I'm not counting that. No. I'm assuming $10 billion on top of it.
No, above and beyond, right?
Right, so if you assume $10 billion there, then you're going to have to – that's going to have to come out of – many of the same programs that sustained pretty significant cuts.
But the school administrators and the school boards have a protection racket here, so we're back to court. Because the conversation when you talk to almost anybody in and around politics or the Capitol is not, do you think the state's going to lose that case? The conversation is about how much do you think this is going to cost? They assume they're going to lose the case.
Right.
They've always lost the case. I think there's four cases now.
There's four.
And there's going to be a fifth case
that was referred to colloquially as the Waiting for Superman lawsuit.
Right.
I saw a mention of that yesterday.
This was the idea that it's disequitable because you don't allow charter schools and vouchers.
Right.
Right. So,
but again, you know, unless you're prepared to employ the Premont solution, let's everybody stop playing sports for a year. and save all that money, and then we'll go back to playing sports. Unless you're willing to be brave or stupid, depending upon how you feel about this fellow in Premont, and do that model statewide. There are very few options for these for these folks.
Right.
Well, plus we haven't even talked about all the other things that we're going to have to fund in the next budget, like a water plan. I mean, at a certain point, there's really no alternative.
I'm sure Spicewood's looking forward to that.
Well, you know, exactly. And we had this round of, you know, Tommy Williams and all those guys saying, you know, look, if you want roads, you got to pay for them. There's no road ferry. Mm-hmm. There's no water ferry. The water plan, you know, I guess the estimates range
huge
all the way up to, you know, $11 or $12 billion.
And we're currently funding that at about $500 million. We put in about $500 million to a quote-unquote water plan. And we've got estimates as high as you said, $5 or $6 billion. So, I mean, you know.
So what is you came with specifics? You're on the wrong podcast.
Don't
start dropping.
I actually was told
that
I was actually told that this would entirely be about barbecue. So I was expecting
on the basic level it is.
And you brought no barbecue. Here you are with numbers and no barbecue.
I recall us chiding you at the beginning of the podcast about that.
So what? What do you do? What do you do with 90 to 100 Republicans in the House, almost 2/3 in the Senate? And Governor Perry back trying to reestablish his conservative role here in the state.
Is he trying to reestablish his conservative role?
I guess that's to be seen. I mean, we may find out a little bit on Monday.
Part of the reason that his conservatism was so important to be performed in the last legislative session was to prepare for a presidential run. I mean,
yeah, but do you doubt that if he's not as conservative temperamentally as he appeared to be in the last session?
I also think he can adjust as need be.
But what do you
we're
do
not
with,
walking on eggshells this time like
right.
we were last time.
Exactly. It may not be his choice.
You know, don't do this because it would be bad for the governor. We're not in that mode anymore.
But hold on. That assumes something that I'm not sure I agree with, which is that the legislature was as conservative as it was out of fear of offending the governor in the run-up to a presidential race.
Well,
I think the legislature is every bit as conservative as the governor, and that the Senate is apt now to be significantly more conservative as a body. Even if the lieutenant governor's office is occupied by somebody else, let's just say, you're going to see a change out of five people in the Senate, and in every instance, the person who replaces the person who leaves is going to be not just more conservative, but probably significantly more conservative.
And I had somebody tell me that in a story last week. They said, you know, the governor may have wanted budget cuts, but the 30 new Tea Party members in the Texas House wanted those budget cuts even more than the governor did.
As much as the governor.
Yeah, but the governor bolstered them, and I think he had everybody on a short
leash. And he had a bully pulpit.
I think the leash is going to be a little bit longer this time. He's going to remain conservative. I just don't think they're going to be trying to play as safe as they were trying to play.
But what do you do with that makeup if you need more revenue?
Well,
what
don't
do you?
Well, I mean, so don't you have don't guys you? Like Tommy Williams coming forward and say we need fees to pay for transportation costs? You know?
Right. You've got
which seems like it's a significant precursor to the session. If you have guys like Williams saying, you know, raising revenue was anathema last session, but we need to think about it. But you had Republican
leadership that at the very beginning of the last session was saying, oh, my God, we have to spend all the rainy day fund or my district won't accept me back in district.
And we have to tweak the margins tax. That was Steve Ogden before the session began.
And Joe Strauss.
Do you want more roads? There's the Tommy Williams, John Corona. There's a bunch of people. Look, if you want a road, we have to pay for the road. If you want to pay for the road, here are the ways to pay for the road. What do you want to do? If you want to water your state,
case, it was the car tag, right? Raising
right.
the car
if,
tag.
Right. If you want to keep, you know, your quarter acre of St. Augustine, we need a water plan. If you want to, you know, Lake Levan up in Collin County, right in the middle of all of that, up in Collin and Denton, right in the middle of all of those Tea Party people, they're running out of water. So what do you guys want to do? I mean, and if you talk to politicians who are going in front of those crowds and they say, listen, would you guys accept a $10 or $20 or $30 fee on this stuff to ensure water supplies, all the hands go up.
Right, except
so
the,
I mean, so you got to build.
But
so what
not
happens?
Organized.
What happens is that during this election cycle, you begin building the case for those kinds of things, so that the legislature goes in and has, you know, if it works for them, so that they can go into the next session and have some kind
maybe
of a mandate for either money for water, money for transportation, money for whatever. You know, the other thing here is the other federal lawsuit that's hanging out there, and Texas is only, you know, a relative bit player in it, is the whole thing over federal health care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does that go and how does that shake through the state budget is also going to be part of this equation.
Well, I just still wonder, though, and maybe I'm just being too cynical, that you may have constituents who are willing to raise their hand and say, oh, yes, I'll take that you know, $20 or $30 extra fee. But if your lawmaker is David Simpson, what do you expect to happen?
Well, but there's a larger
and I'm just pulling him out. I think there's more
examples.
The larger
problem is that that side of the conversation is not organized in any way. We know what the other
side.
Which side?
The side of the
conversation that's willing to entertain a personal hit for the greater good of better roads or a water plant or whatever else. There may be people out there who feel that way. In fact, I'm certain that there are people out there who feel that way. But that side of the conversation is not organized. The other side of the conversation, i.e., the Michael Quinn Sullivan side of the conversation, where if you say, as Joe Strauss did, we can't cut our way to prosperity, you know, it's storm the Bastille, right?
Right.
That side we know is organized. Now, you are aware of an effort on the Republican side to counter that mentality.
Well, they're starting – there's a couple of things going on. Yeah. There's a slate, and that's a – it's probably not as organized as a slate, but there's a group of candidates that are sort of education Republicans that have kind of popped up in races as you look at the filing. So there's that, and that's kind of a loose thing. You know, the Bennett Ratliffs and the James Wilsons and people like that around the state. There's a group now starting a thing called the Texas Conservative Roundtable that is apparently going to be some kind of an organized counter to the Michael Quinn Sullivans and the Empower Texans and things like that. I also think that you're going to organize some of this stuff in a loose way around the 2014 statewide candidates. They got to run on something. You know, when Greg Abbott runs for governor and when these three statewide officials all run for lieutenant governor, they're going to be coming in and saying, listen, we want to do something. And I think some of these problems are going to be even more pressing than they are now.
You're making an assumption that, especially in a competitive primary for lieutenant governor,
right,
that the move is going to be to try to actually accomplish something as opposed to try to climb right over one another to get to the right of the field.
You're talking about a move to the center.
Well, I'm not talking about a move to the center. I'm talking about a move to get some projects done.
I think isn't that kind of a move to the center?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think they're going to try to figure out how to do it in a fiscally conservative way. They're going to say cut this and do that. But look, folks, we need roads,
privatized state parks.
We need, the theory here, even among the Republicans, even among the conservative Republicans, is that people will pay for the things that they think that they need and that they think that the state will do. But you have to make that case. And I think that and what I'm saying isn't that they're going to move left, but that they're going to try to make the case for funding water plans, for funding transportation. And they'll probably at the same time make a case against some of the things that we do now. We ought to stop doing that. We ought to start doing this. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the point. Right. I don't disagree with you that there'll be a case made for those new programs, but I suspect that they're going to make the case saying we can only pay for those new programs if we cut other things. You know, we're sitting here this morning on a day when Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma is single-handedly blocking the funding of a 9/11 Memorial Museum in the U.S. Senate because he's demanding spending cut offsets in order to fund that museum. A 9/11 Memorial Museum. We're really going to – I mean, you know, it's amazing to me that the conversation in this country has gotten to a place where we can no longer spend money on anything, not just crazy stuff, not bridges to nowhere, not like, you know, chicken coop museums and stuff, but a 9/11 museum. This entire country pivots off of 9/11 10 years later. You know, who would oppose a 9/11 museum? Well, Coburn's view, and Coburn's a fiscal conservative, is can't do it unless we find spending cut offsets. I'd be surprised if any of the Republican candidates for lieutenant governor, or Greg Abbott for that matter, was prepared to put himself or herself out there and say we should spend on roads or spend on water, even understanding that the need is there, without saying that money has to come from existing spending that gets cut to offset the cost of those new programs.
Or from user fees. I mean, there are a bunch of ways to fund things that are acceptable to conservatives. You know, if you're going to pay for, you know, if you want this, you have to pay for it. Oh, okay, I get that. I mean, you just have to make the case. They haven't been making that case. The case they've been making is a case in reaction to a bunch of rallies that popped up in 2008 and 2009, which, by the way, have stopped. When's the last time you saw a Tea Party rally? You know, that people were saying, you know, stop spending this money. There was a large group of people that, you know, we've all talked to here who were saying, you know, part of the problem here is that Texas is trying to operate a state government and everybody's conflating the problems of the federal government and its fiscal messes with the state government, and it's a different can of wax. But somebody has to come out and make that case. And I think, you know, You can't continue to just say, me too, me too, me too, and run a statewide program. These guys are going to have to do something. They're going to have to be for something. And this is something that you're starting to hear from Republican candidates.
They want roads.
They want water.
Do you think that the stumbles of Perry's national campaign have hurt the brand, going into the next legislative session, have hurt the brand that he stands for in terms of, you know, fiscal conservatism in the state legislature? In other words, does it provide an opening for the folks who'd like to spend more on state services, who found themselves in opposition to the governor during the last legislative session, to say, look, he's weaker than you thought he was, and also the brand for which he stands maybe is even weaker than you thought it was?
I think the first part's right and the second part's wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's – I mean, it may – I don't know that it's hurt the ideas. I think that it's certainly hurt the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the messenger you know, whether Perry comes back from this or not, we can argue about. But, you know, I don't know that it's hurt the things that he was talking about. I think, you know, federalism still works people up.
Well, there may be one issue that got more sunlight on it than it had previously.
Well, that's true. There's that effect as well.
Well, for instance, I think it's going to be an interesting question. If you brought in-state tuition up before the legislature now.
Right.
In the light of the campaign and the reaction that Perry got among conservatives to in-state tuition, I suspect – I have no proof of this, but I suspect that a lot of conservatives in Texas did not know about Texas providing in-state tuition to the children of undocumented persons until the campaign.
So you're saying what would happen if it came up?
Well, I wonder if the backlash against the Perry campaign won't be from the left of Perry, but rather from the right of Perry.
And you think Perry would hold his ground in that situation?
I don't know. I mean, you know, he called people who didn't support him heartless.
Right.
You know?
And he doubled down on it. And he continued to hold that position and explain it. And, I mean, it was a, you know.
Look, part of the issue here is going to be.
Was he taking a position the legislature would support, right?
And right. I think
part of the position here, to get back to the 2014 races, is who is going to succeed David Dewhurst as lieutenant governor if David Dewhurst goes to the U.S. Senate?
Right.
The wide speculation centers around people like Kevin Eltife, Robert Duncan, and Tommy Williams. I think those are the three names I keep hearing.
Yeah.
Who else do you hear?
Well, I mean, you hear 31 names. You know, there's the first vote. The joke is always the first vote is 1-1-1-1-1, right? And it kind of depends on a number of things. It depends on whether these new conservative members are allowed to vote, or if the vote is on the Senate before that. You know,
with the existing,
is it the existing Senate or the new Senate? You know. And what do the members want? Do they want to elect somebody who's going to be the new lieutenant governor and is going to run for the job, or do they want to elect a placeholder? Are they, you know?
And the assumption then is that if it's somebody who is not running in 2014, that person has the ability to be braver in leadership.
Well, or to go in as a lame duck who's just a placeholder. I mean, you know, it's a nice office. Yeah. It's a corner office.
Well, my point is, does Strauss plus the replacement equal a sufficient counter to the Perry view of the world?
Well,
assuming
to me,
that the governor and the speaker aren't.
To me, the guy who wants to drive here, if he wants to drive, Joe Strauss is in position here. Rick Perry comes back, you know, on crutches. There's a new guy over in the Senate. Strauss can, you know.
And Tom Craddock gave him a roadmap for how to be the most powerful person
here
in the Capitol.
You know, opportunity.
And he already did start to assert himself. I mean, it was October when he gave that interview to the El Paso Times where he said, you know, you can't cut your way to prosperity. You need to fix the margins tax. That was, I mean, Perry was not mortally wounded at that point. That was pre-oops. That was still in the middle of the campaign. And it was, I think, it was a significant moment for the speaker to come out and say those things at that point.
Well, let's wrap up here in just a minute, but first wanted to touch on, we did get another round of campaign finance reports here this week. Governor Perry, yes, in fact, did not make any money after his oops moment, but had Ron Paul got $13 million.
Paul's cruising right along. He's doing, you know.
And 50% of them are from small donors, $200 right. or less. I mean, that's impressive.
And then what have anyone seen any interesting state numbers in terms of fundraising?
There's some. I mean, you know, Rick Perry, you know, one of the numbers that sort of jumped out at the very beginning was that before he started the presidential run, Rick Perry raised, I'm forgetting the number, like $1.5 million in a month and a half for his own account, for his state account. You know, the Senate candidates, there's three Senate candidates that are floating around the $3 or $4 million range now, the U.S. Senate stuff.
Leopard, Cruz, and Dewhurst.
The story on campaign fundraising in Texas for state races is that this confusion over whether and when we're going to have a primary is frozen the money. And
well, the reality is in many cases, candidates can't go out and raise money from people right. because they don't know which districts they're running in.
Mark, let's come back to that for a second. I know we're trying to wrap up, but earlier we talked about how there could be a split primary, but maybe we'll come back to that. I mean, it seems like the state has essentially said we cannot afford a split primary, so that's off the table. And yet, how can we not have a split primary if, in fact, we're unable to come to terms?
It's actually still on the table.
It's still on the table.
Yeah. So what the court said was you can split the primary two ways. Or this is kind of what the testimony is. You can split the primary two ways. You can split it so that you have two primaries and two runoffs, or you could just have the presidential primary, which doesn't have a runoff, in April, and have everything else later. And so we'll find out. I think we'll find out within a week whether they're going to peel off the presidential thing. The court, just judging, this is guessing from what the judges were asking in court. The court was concerned that Texans, and in particular Texas Republicans, since that's where the race is, have an opportunity to have their say in the presidential race, and that the presidential primary isn't delayed so much that the race is over by the time it gets here.
Too late.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean,
Anybody watch the returns last night?
You say that.
Maybe the Santorum-Romney deal when it gets here,
Or frankly, Texans might very well back Gingrich over Romney.
Right. So, anyway, the court's aware of that.
Test Perry's the loyalty to Gingrich.
And they're looking at this, and they're basically saying, listen, if the legislative and congressional stuff isn't together in time for us to have an early April primary, then let's delay it. But we're not sure we're going to delay the presidential.
And the perceived benefit there would be, the Democrats would have some benefit from that.
Well, the Democrats don't have. The Democratic candidates aren't dependent on the presidential race being a contest and drawing a big crowd and affecting their
turnout. In the same way that the Republicans
are. Right. Some of the Republicans are worried that if you're not on the ballot with a presidential race that's drawing moderates to your primary, that you're going to be in a primary with just the really very, very Republicans. For some candidates, that works, and for some candidates, it doesn't.
I'll tell you the big takeaway for me from the Perry campaign finance numbers and the general presidential numbers is that Harold Simmons has displaced Bob Perry as the great bankroller of presidential candidates. I thought the number I saw was a total of $7 million he had donated to various PACs and candidates. Is that true?
Yeah.
Including $1 million through his Contran Corporation.
Watch out,
Sheldon. The Perry Super PAC. I think that the Tribune has not asked Harold Simmons for nearly enough money. I did have that note to self.
Right.
Especially after you spent all that money bundling for the Perry campaign.
Yes,
I'm sure he'd love
to.
Maybe he could pay for
E.
a renovation
Smith.
Of this studio.
It's really fancy,
new
Jake.
New
shut
tapestries.
Up.
We need new tapestries.
They'll know.
I'm tired of these tapestries.
The one who moved into the fancy building anyway.
Todd needs a new gourd.
I think on that note,
that would also be a good name for Jake's record. Todd needs a new gourd.
Coming to iTunes soon, as does apparently this podcast, although as Reeve continues to explain, if you look at it on the website, it looks like we haven't done anything since the summer. But
yet
anyway.
Another thing Reeve has not done well.
Well, when you're cruising all the time, it's hard.
I know.
So, if you have any questions or comments or tapestry suggestions for us, go ahead and email us at tribcast@tribune.org?
Shut up.
Sorry.
Tripcast at TexasTribune.org.
At TexasTribune.org. Right. Right. See?
Reeve at IndigoGirlsGroupie.net.
You should stop going on cruises.
You get Mark sealed, as you well know, the long tradition of exactly. If you don't show up, we're going to make you do bad stuff.
On behalf of Evan and Ross and Jake and, of course, our wonderful producer Todd, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week. Hello. Would you enjoy coming back to my apartment for a few episodes of Downton Abbey?
That's pretty good.